Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812 is the improbable title of an improbable show based on a 70-page selection from Tolstoy's War and Peace. With music, books, and lyrics by Dave Malloy, this sung-through and inventively staged musical follows the story of Natasha, a young Russian beauty engaged to Andre, and Pierre, an aging aristocrat going through an existential crisis. Their stories interweave through the vibrant cast of characters in Moscow as everyone strives to reach conflicting goals. My guest today is Janelle Benton, a singer, actress, and friend who enthusiastically loves Great Comet. Some logistical notes. Listen to the spoiler horn to mark when the spoilers begin in this episode. Also, I apologize for the delay in this episode's release. Corner is going bi-weekly from now on, so the next episode will be released on March 10th. Again, apologies that switch happened without warning, but from now on, bi-weekly on schedule. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812. Hello, Janelle. How are you doing?
Hi, Quinn. I'm doing well, thanks. You?
Pretty good. Excited to get going. What are we talking about today?
So today we'll talk about one of my favorite musicals, Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812.
Okay, we're going to get way into this and why it's your favorite in a minute, but do you want to start off with telling me how you learned about this show, when you saw it, any of those details?
So I don't remember exactly how I learned about it. I think it was just kind of on the periphery of my mind. Like, I'd heard of it. And then this summer, I was in New York and seeing a lot of shows. I decided I wanted to see this show, mainly because Josh Groban was in it. So I went. I actually saw it when Oak, if you're listening, and I completely messed up your name when he was playing Pierre, but it was absolutely amazing. I think I went in almost blind. Like, I don't think I had listened to the album or maybe like one song beforehand, so I didn't completely know what to expect, and I just absolutely loved it.
That's so cool. It's kind of funny that you went in for specifically one person and then that one person was not there.
Yes.
But I'm glad you loved it anyway.
Yeah. Yes. I knew that he wasn't going to be there just because I had like put off getting the tickets because it was really expensive when Josh Groban was in it. And then I ended up actually getting really lucky and getting to buy lottery tickets that had been returned to the box office when Oak was in it.
Wow, that is a Broadway pro tip right there. Just show up and see if you can get super cheap tickets to stuff. I actually saw this production. I've never seen the Broadway production, and it's off Broadway now, so I don't think I will ever see the Broadway production, sadly. But I went to see it when it was at the American Repertory Theater, which is a theater local to Boston, and it was the pre-Broadway run. And so it actually had run off-Broadway before and had a couple of iterations, but this was the run that happened directly before transferring to Broadway, and it had a lot of the same cast, except not Josh Groban. And I actually didn't like it very much.
Oh, no.
And we'll get into why specifically, but it was more, I thought the music was great. Of course, like, the music is wonderful and super interesting. And I really liked Pierre. I thought that all of the Pierre storylines and songs were great, but I just couldn't with Natasha.
No! This is making me sad.
Well, I will tell you, I re-listened, or I guess I listened for the first time for the full Broadway cast recording today in preparation for this, and I have different thoughts about it now, so we can get into that a little bit later when we get into spoiler territory.
Okay, good to hear.
But kicking this off, can you give us a brief overview of, like, what is this show with a really weirdly long title?
Yes, so it's a, I think, completely sung through musical, written by David Malloy. It's basically a musical adaptation of, I think it's one of the books of War and Peace. I think it's like book 8 of War and Peace. So the story is kind of about a couple of different people, but the main storylines, one is this girl, Natasha, who has gone to Moscow to stay with her godmother, and she's engaged to Andre, who's off at war. And while she's with her godmother, they go to an opera, and she meets a gentleman. and trouble ensues. And then the other kind of like plot line that goes throughout is about Pierre, who is older. He's just someone who's very unhappy with his life, kind of nihilistic. And as the story goes on with Natasha, kind of his emotional journey into figuring out what he wants and kind of like how to get out of the rut he's in goes on as well.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good summation. It's a really interesting show in a lot of ways. It is not typical in basically any way, being completely sung through, and there are so many characters and they all have different names. And this is a thing that I thought is super interesting about this show, is how incredibly self-aware it is, because they literally sing an introductory song of all the characters and mention that, hey, they all have a lot of different names, and it's super confusing because this is Russian, so check out your program because there's a list in there. And it's incredibly self-aware as to what it is at all times.
Yes, that's definitely true. I'm not sure how it was at the ART production, but on Broadway, it was arranged so that the audience was very much a part of the show as well, both with the seating where some of the audience was on the main part of the stage, and the actors would interact with them at different parts of the show, as well as for the majority of the audience, members of the ensemble would kind of come up and be dancing in the aisles as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge part of this, is how it's not immersive theater in the same way that some shows have you literally walking around as part of the show, but pretty much as close as you could get to that while still being a seated audience member, is they're really all around you, especially if you have one of these onstage seats. And when I was there, they passed out pierogies to everyone before the show started.
They, I think on Broadway, I think they, like, threw them into the crowd, so I didn't get one, but it was cool to see.
Wait, they were just whipping pierogies at people?
Yes, well, they were like in little boxes.
Oh, okay. Mm. I'm just picturing a potato flying in the air. Also in the production I saw, like you mentioned, all the ensemble members are going out into the audience, like, even though I had a pretty seat that was pretty far back and not close to it at all, but that they really bring the show to you a lot. And there's also just this one specific ensemble member who, she was wearing a crop top, and she had these tattoos that were like the holes in a violin, in the shape of those holes on her stomach. And so she was tattooed like a violin, and I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
That's so cool. I don't remember seeing her, but I wish I had.
I know that has nothing to do with this musical, but I don't know her name, but I'm very impressed with her tattoos. Where were you sitting when you went to see it?
So I was sitting in the back section off to the side. It was, I was sitting next to another lottery ticket person who had actually won the lottery, who had also won the lottery for Hamilton.
Wow.
That's just a lucky person. So it was a pretty good seat. I could see most things. There was one specific moment I couldn't see.
Yeah, the whole thing about lotteries and rush tickets is great, and it's actually not that hard to get them if you're in New York for the whole day. Mm-hmm. But lots of partial view seating. Whole lot of it. They need to build theaters and not like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hot take.
Yes.
Build theaters so there are no partial view sittings.
Yes.
Just like the uncommon seating arrangements in this show, it also has really interesting style of music. Perhaps not what you would expect from a Russian opera.
Yes, so I think when it was at the ART, they called it an electropop opera, which I think is a pretty good description of it, though not completely on the nose. There's just a lot of different styles. Like, there's very musical theater-y numbers, but then there's also like some folk music styles in there. There's one club scene, like Oons Party Club. So it's definitely a whole mix.
Yeah, and this entire show, like, book, score, everything was written by... I actually don't know if... Is it Dave Malloy or Dave Malloy?
Yeah, I don't know. That was a yes to two options.
Okay. Sorry, Dave. He's actually really cool. I went to a panel that he was speaking at BroadwayCon last year, and he spoke a little bit about making the show. And, like, this is one of those things that when someone's entire personhood goes into making a project and they've basically composed every aspect of it. It's just so cool to see that passion, and especially see that when it, like, goes to Broadway and get 12 Tony nominations, you know, like, good job. But anyway, the music is pulled from so many different types of styles, and, like, and clearly a lot from the roots of the same source material, as this Russian novel, but at the same time, like, yeah, like, pop and rock and rave music and just every style you can think of. And I feel like I wouldn't necessarily know that it was a song from Great Comet if you just played the music for me, because a lot of them are so different from each other.
Mm. No, I agree. There is a level of consistency, I think, in the kind of, like, emotionality behind the songs. That I feel help it to be identifiable, but especially if you were to pick songs, like, from completely different, like, parts of the plot and, like, feelings of the plot, the songs would just be extraordinarily unique.
Which is really cool in a way as well. I was listening to it, and there's one particular song that's, like, this very musical theater ballad that happens in the second act, and it feels almost out of place compared to all of these wild, like, different genres shoved together, and then you just have this, like, one very traditional song thrown in there, but at the same time it works because it's so anachronous, because it's not anachronous. This show is weird.
No, I agree. Actually, I can think of the two most musical theater style songs of the show, and they're actually two of the songs that stand out the most as, I guess, like, being strange in their style in the context of the rest of the show.
So I'm gonna assume that one of these is Dust and Ashes.
Yes.
So Dust and Ashes is Josh Groban's / Pierre's big solo. It's like 6 minutes long. I love this song.
It's so good. You know, he wrote it for Josh Groban to show off his voice.
It's beautiful. I really recommend it. It's like, again, this is not my favorite musical ever, but I've listened to this song in particular so many times, especially because it's absolutely gorgeous, and it starts out really slow, and the last minute and a half is a total bop, so recommend.
Yes. And then, do you know the other one I'm talking about?
I was talking about Sonya's.
Oh, see, I didn't view that as very, as super musical theater style. I was talking about No One Else. That's Natasha's Act 1 solo about Andre.
Yeah, you're right.
I always viewed Sonya Alone as kind of more folk, like what I'd think of like modern folk pop.
There is that as well in it too, which is funny because Ingrid Michaelson, who is modern folk pop, went on to play Sonya on Broadway, and in the recording I was like, this is an Ingrid Michaelson song.
I saw it with her, and it was basically her singing one of her own songs.
It just stuck out to me at the time because it was just such a different pace than the rest of everything that was happening around it. So I'm assuming you've gone back and listened to the soundtrack a bunch since you've seen it on Broadway.
Yes, I don't even have a count of how many times I've listened to it. This is not replace because I love Hamilton as everyone does, but in my like rotation of what do I listen to on a plane ride, what do I listen to while doing work, it's now Great Comet.
Wow, that is a high honor.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely it's. I love to listen through sung through musicals on the recording because it feels so much like reliving the show. Like you can see in your mind, like the different parts, like people singing, because the entire story is just being presented back to you. And then it's just such an arc. I know you have feelings about Natasha's storyline, but I find it really interesting. Even listening to it the 100th time, I still get very frustrated with Natasha, but also feel a lot of empathy for her. So it's just one of my jams.
So do you think that the soundtrack being sung through and everything is a good representation of what you saw in person as well? Or do you think it loses a lot?
I think it is actually a very good representation because the quality of the songs and the voices of the actors and actresses singing them kind of gives you a similar sense of the emotion that you would see in like seeing their faces and seeing their acting. So I think it'll never equal actually seeing the people perform it, but I think it does a very good job of replicating the drama of the show.
That's a good way to put it. I will say, as someone who doesn't know the show particularly well, going back and listening to the soundtrack for the first time, I found it pretty hard to follow sometimes, especially because the characters do this thing a lot, which is really in the style of the show, but they will narrate in third person and speak in first person interchangeably, which is really hard to keep track of who someone is if you don't know their voice already.
No, I will agree with that. I never thought of it that way. But definitely, like, having seen them singing it, so having a rough idea of, like, even, like, going back and listening to it for, like, the first time after seeing it, of, like, who's singing what part, I think helped a lot. I'd imagine that it would be something kind of tricky. Like, I would definitely recommend, like, following along with the lyrics the first time you listen through it. Even now, I was looking up the lyrics to one of the songs, and there was like a solid like 25 seconds that I thought Mario was singing, and I found out it was Sonia, and then Sonia and Natasha singing together.
Uh-oh.
So that was new.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, and there's just a lot of characters. I cannot stress how there's a lot of characters enough.
And so many names. So many names.
So many names. That is a fun thing from the original Russian source material, which we're not talking about a lot because neither of us have read it and we don't really know that much about Russian. I mean, I'm going to assume you don't know that much about Russian.
I do not, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But based on my limited knowledge, like somebody in Russia has a name and then they have various versions of their name based on your relationship to that person. Mm-hmm. So like Natasha is Natasha, but then people who are close to her call her Natalie, and then so on and so forth for every character in this show.
Yes, and like Natasha's actual name is not Natasha. Her actual name is Natalia.
Yeah, and it's just
Countess Natalia Ilinichna Rostova, actually.
I want that as a ringtone.
There's a song where it's near the beginning where like they sing a couple of the characters' like full names, which is really interesting. The more you hear it, the more it kind of just gets drilled into your head.
Calm down, Russia.
So again, I know that when it was at the ART, they also had, I think it's called like the perennium stage. So like that kind of, think, what are they called? Like the gladiators, like that setup of the curved stage. They would fight like in the Colosseum, except not a full circle. So that they had it like set up like that as well, which was really great in like making it feel very, very different, just like marking out that it was going to be like a different kind of show. But it was one of the most beautiful, like the theater was gorgeous how they decorated it. There were just lights everywhere, so many lights just like hanging from the ceiling, like over the audience, even where I was near the back. And then they had like tables set up, like even in the back, like amongst the chairs. And I think the goal was to create like the Russian supper club feel that they had very explicitly in the earlier off-Broadway versions, where they actually like set up the rooms to look like Russian clubs. So that was something I really enjoyed. I also personally loved the entrance into the theater. They made it Cold War Russia themed.
Oh no.
So it was very, it was, so it's like you go into the theater, it was very like concrete posters, like unadorned, and then you walked into, so like the lobby, and then you walked into the actual theater, and it was just like this grandiose like transportation back into this like golden age of Russia, and I really, really enjoyed that.
That's really cool. I didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. I love seeing what different productions can do with different theaters, in the way that some are, it's more like it just feels like this is a show that's in this theater, and one is like the theater is part of the experience. This is definitely part of that. And they did win the Tony Awards for Best Scenic Design, yes, and Best Lighting Design, mm-hmm, which they well deserved. Totally deserved. Yeah. It was definitely one of the most creative, if not the most creative configurations of scenic design that has been on Broadway.
Just beautiful.
So I think at this point we're going to sound off the spoiler horn. Janelle is very excited. Okay, what would you like to talk about now, Janelle?
Okay, I think first we should talk about Natasha.
Okay, let's talk about Natasha. So I'm going to share, I'll share why I didn't like her and why I'm not sure now. So I went to see the show a couple years ago, and I came away from it, again, liking the music, but not being super impressed with the story. I felt like I wasn't very invested in Natasha. And this is my personal pet peeve, is I just really don't like the whole love at first sight. I've known this person for a day. I love them. Like, this whole idea. I just find it really annoying at Les Mis. and so that really kind of biased me against the show. And then I was listening again to the soundtrack, I think just focusing on listening to it and not being sort of distracted by all of the other features of this show, that I was really so much more aware of the way that Anatole forces himself on her and manipulates her. And even though there is definitely still some aspect of that, you can also, I think there are a lot of different interpretations of the way that that goes down. And there's a lot that you can hear from her of the way she's justifying what's happened to herself by declaring that she's in love with him, rather than that coming before the fact. And that made me think a lot more about her complexity as a character.
Yes. So I never quite viewed Natasha kind of with the love at first sight lens. I think kind of her relationship with Anatole is divided kind of into two parts. There's the second part, which Quinn just described, in which he's very like, kind of like aggressive towards her. Like it's kind of like a whole song that's just very deeply uncomfortable to listen to. And then so that I would say is kind of a second, I guess more like three parts. I would do the second part. The very first part is when they first just meet and are speaking to each other. And even in that, I never saw that as kind of a love at first sight situation. I viewed it more as like an infatuation slash lust at first sight, being confused with love. I think they make, the argument is very explicitly made that Anatole is very hot. Like it says in the first
song. Whole tagline.
In the first song, they have a tagline for each character, and Anatole is hot. So I think that in doing that and setting him up very much to be like this like suave, very handsome playboy, in the first meeting when they've just like spoken to each other, and she's like getting flustered and, oh, he's looking at me, this is so exciting, is kind of placed there to show it's not love at first sight. Like she just thinks, because she doesn't really have, I guess, like the this is what, 19th century Russia, 18th century Russia, kind of, I guess, like the knowledge slash the language to like describe, oh, I'm just very attracted to him. I'm not in love with him. So that's like the first meeting. Then the kind of, I think it's the second meeting, which is the uncomfortable one. She is in a situation where she's kind of like unsure of what these feelings are that she has and how they fit in with her engagement with Andre, who she's like been in love with for a whole year. And then at that point, Anatole is pretty aggressive towards her. And she's like trying to kind of leave.
She flat out refuses him several times.
Yes, yes. She's like, no, I'm leaving. And he's like, no, like he sings something that's like literally repeating. It's very uncomfortable. Like she, at that point, like she's not sure what her feelings are, but like, he's very much like not respecting the fact that she's like, okay, I want to leave anyway. And then there's like a kiss that's kind of basically him like just kissing her, even though she's been trying to leave, which not cool. And it's at that point that she actually, one of the lines, she's like, I love him, how else could we have kissed? Which is kind of like a little heartbreaking. because it's, as Quinn said, like her like translating that like kind of traumatic experience into, oh, well, I love him and he loves me, so this was all fine because it's love, which not what love is. But yeah, so with Natasha, I find her to be a complex character. I understand the points where she, like, I guess like everyone doesn't really like her that much at first, which I don't think is so much a consequence of her arc because she's very much the victim in her arc, but more, honestly, she just gets a lot of very like ingenue kind of songs, and I think that can annoy people.
Like me.
Especially, I think what sets up people to like be annoyed with her off the bat is her very first song, which is absolutely gorgeous, but it's a song about Andre and about how like Andre's just the light of her light and she loves him so much and dreams about him each and every night, which I think kind of is what rubs people the wrong way about her initially. But she's actually I think a very complicated character. Also, her story gets very dark at the end, and that's the one thing that I don't think it's given enough weight at the end of the story. So after everything comes out that Anatole is like married to some woman in Poland, and she had already like broken up with Andre, and like her life's just a mess, and she thinks her reputation's ruined and her family's reputation's ruined, she poisons herself. And that, it gets, I think, a song, two songs. It gets like one and a half songs of attention, which I wish it was given more weight, especially like in the context of it happening after all that she goes through with Anatole. I just think is a very, I think that part of the story is presented kind of as, because she's like, oh, I don't know what to do now that like everything's messed up. But that in reality, in the context of a character and like what she's just been through, it's also on the level of she can no longer like say, oh, everything that happens fine because we're all in love. Like, it's kind of like a, I guess, being confronted like, oh, whoa, like what just happened to me? Like, because, and it takes place over 3 days too. So I think it's a lot. I think it's, there are multiple layers to the story, and it gets more complicated the more you peel it back.
Mm-hmm. The sort of the defining trait of Natasha, I mean, I think her tagline in the beginning is Natasha is young, right?
Yes, yes.
Like, her defining trait is that she is young and naive and innocent. And I think that a lot of her arc in the show is her trying to process and hold on to this innocence. And it's like this whole thing is like, oh, what happened was, like, I'm in love with this guy, and, like, that is what defines me. And then the next thing is, like, oh, well, this happened, And so now I'm in love with this guy, but it's okay. Like, this is still a very pure thing. Like, it's going to be okay. And then, yeah, I think you're right, is that she's, and at the end she's confronted with like, oh no, like this wasn't okay the whole time. And I've made mistakes and people have like assaulted me basically. Mm-hmm. And then she has to process that and can't, and doesn't see a way out of that situation. And she does survive, by the way. Like, she does not.
Yes, she does.
She is alive at the end of the show, mm-hmm. but she does attempt to kill herself.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think if there's one, like, major critique I'd give to the plot, it's that they don't treat the assault, like, as one, really, I think, from what I remember. Like, I mean, it's they kind of do, but they also kind of don't. And I think that was something that should have maybe been given more, should have been handled more carefully. I don't know. What do you think, Quinn? I don't think it was handled carelessly. I think it just, like, I think the weight of that, like, didn't quite, what, I think there wasn't quite as much weight given to it as there should have been.
Yeah, I think Anatole as a character is pretty roundly condemned. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to think he's good. We're supposed to think he's this bad, corrupting influence. And so I think that in general, like, the show does not treat him kindly, but I don't think that that particular event, like, it's when people from Natasha's life start finding out about her relationship with Anatole, like, she's just like, oh, well, we're in love and this is totally great. And it's, there's no context given to, like, how it started. Mm-hmm. And so the, like, no other characters have to reckon with this except for Natasha.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that obscures it in a lot of ways.
Yes, like, I remember this one moment that, like, especially struck me, because Pierre is supposed to be, is for the most part, he has a lot of flaws, but he's, like, portrayed as, like, a good guy. And there's one line where, like, Maria goes to Pierre to, like, beg him to help to save the family's reputation by, like, getting Anatole to leave town after, like, everything's, like, hit the fan. And he says, when she says that Natasha has tried to elope with Anatole, Pierre says, like, poor Andre, so I'm not the only man chained to a bad woman.
Ugh. This show also calls several characters sluts throughout.
Yes, yes, it does.
Yeah. Which I think, and on one hand, this, like, that's within the context of the show, and mm-hmm. I think that on, like, the meta level, it does have interesting, complicated female characters that are given agency, but at the same time, like, you know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also, Andre.
Also,
talk
Andre.
About Andre for a second. Andre, okay. So, I understand Andre not being thrilled that Natasha broke up with him to elope with someone else. That I get. Andre was not, when Andre found out that Natasha had, like, poisoned herself, he is an interesting character in that he barely appears in this show and still manages to be awful. He's basically like, well, too bad, Natasha. And I have strong feelings about him, obviously, but in the context of a show, I think it's a very interesting choice because he's very much portrayed while he's not there as like, oh, Andre, he's so great. We all love Andre. And then when he comes back, it's made clear, actually, like, explicitly clear through Pierre, like, describing, like, the, like, sickening smile he had when he heard that Natasha was ill, as being very similar to his father, who is made very clear to be, like, a bad, spiteful person. And it's also interesting because they're both played by the same person, to underlie that.
That's nice. I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, it's not great. Not a lot of great characters in this show, yeah. except for Natasha and
Sonia.
Pierre, really.
Sonia is
and
good.
Sonia. Sonia is good.
Everyone should just listen to Sonia. Sonia gives great advice.
She really did. And the show is very tropey in a lot of ways with these characters. But I mean, that's kind of, I get like, this is all from specific source material from this like classic Russian novel. So of course that it's structured like that. But it is weird. Yeah. And
To return to Anatole for just 1 second. So this is bringing in kind of like, I guess like the outside world into it. But I know like I think it was either Lucas Steele or Dave Meller or maybe both of them who've like spoken about Anatole and like who he is as a character. And something that whoever it was has said was basically like Anatole like doesn't like think he's a bad guy. Like Anatole's just like there's one line where he's like a duck was made to swim in water. God has made me who I am. Like, this is just who I am. I'm just like doing my thing, like not trying to hurt anyone, which I think is interesting of a way to paint him, because I think that also kind of, I don't know, it strikes a note of reality. There's like a lot of people who like go around like doing bad things and like thinking they're not doing anything wrong. So yeah, just, I think a timely theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a very hedonist character.
Yes.
He explicitly refers to Natasha as his new pleasure.
Yes.
And that he doesn't see any reason why he should be denied anything that he wants, including women, clearly. Mm. So that's very concerning on a lot of levels.
Yes. And like when he sings one song where he's like basically like saying goodbye to all of his other like lovers, I guess, it's very strange. He like is naming them, but it's in a very much like, oh, like I like, it's, yeah, like a very much like having to like put down your other toys because you're moving on kind of way. That's Anatole's not great. Lucas Steele is great at playing him, but Anatole is not a great person.
Yeah, Lucas Steele is brilliant.
Lucas Steele is amazing. Oh my gosh, I have feelings about him and his hair and his whole like personality. He makes you like, he's so charismatic that like you start to forget that like Anatole is a bad person, and then you're like, no, like then he says something or does something, and like, nope, I remember all the reasons he's horrible now.
And that's really the kind of actor you have to get to play Anatole. I mean, I think he's played Anatole forever.
Yes, I think since 2012.
Yeah, because he was in the ART production. I think he was in Broadway the entire time.
His hair just kept getting blonder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then it's because Anatole is also supposed to be like this incredibly charming character who everyone is in love with and all this stuff. And so it doesn't work unless you have someone who audiences can actually like, even while he's doing bad things.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite character is still Pierre, though. He does have a lot of flaws, and he also does not seem to be great in how he treats women a lot of the time.
Yes, yes.
But in his defense, his wife is genuinely a terrible person.
Yeah, Helene's not great. She has a great song, but she's not great.
The musical story.
Yes. Okay, so I don't love Pierre.
Okay, go on.
I think what rubs me the wrong way about him is he has a lot of power to change his life, like in terms of like winning the power lottery of a person in 18th century Russia. He's a wealthy, titled man. I think he has a lot of power to make changes in his life that he doesn't quite like go for it for most of the musical. Instead he just kind of like sings about how everything's wrong beautifully, but he feels stagnant, I think, for up until pretty much his like big number in the second act.
See, I interpreted Pierre in a different way, and that is true, but I sort of interpretive it as like a representation of mental health problems, and that like he does have all of this power, but he's unable to change his life or make himself happy because he has trapped himself. And that is never like made an explicit thing, so that's just my own interpretation. But and then with that lens that I was kind of thinking about it through, I thought he's a really interesting character, and then he ends up helping Natasha at the end and is the one to like console her when she feels like her entire life is over and ruined. And this entire musical, the two of them never have a scene together until the very end. And it sort of ties it all up together, as both of their plot lines come to a close in a pretty definitive way. So I don't know. I think that he, not that I would necessarily like want to hang out with him, mm-hmm. but I think he's a very good character.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that interpretation. I don't think he's like, yeah, like even like when I wasn't thinking of him in that way, like I didn't think he was like a bad character. He just wasn't my fave.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. It is interesting how we've had very different feelings about this show. From our first impressions of it. Mm-hmm. That is, I think, one of the things that lends itself to so well to, though, because I think that with a lot of shows, of course, people have like different favorites and different opinions about things, but that it's usually pretty clear as to who the good and bad guys are. Mm-hmm. But with this, it's really obscured in a lot of ways because every character is shown as deeply flawed at the same time that they're deeply hurt. Well, actually, that's not true because a lot of them are just kind of bad. Mm-hmm. But our main characters are primarily shown as like flawed and hurt and just trying to figure stuff out in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Except for Sonya.
Except for Sonya.
Who's just trying to help. Sonya's just there to help.
Sonya has the best of intentions.
She really does. She's
really just doing her best. Mm-hmm.
Get a friend like Sonya.
A friend who will sit outside your door and prevent you from doing stupid things. Or do her best.
Okay, let's talk about the controversy.
Yeah, it is. We have to talk about it. So, as we referenced several times, this is no longer on Broadway. It was reasonably successful, won a couple of Tony Awards, but ended up having to close, I think, even earlier than they expected because of a really big casting controversy that happened in the summer of 2017.
I can give the rundown. So, basically... Josh Groban was playing, as we said before, Pierre from when it went to Broadway up until, I guess, maybe it was 2017, sometime in 2017.
Yeah, it was like July something.
Oh, yeah, I think it was July. And then Oak Onodawin, who you guys might know as playing Hercules Mulligan in Hamilton, took over as Pierre. And he was excellent, by the way. However, when that happened, ticket sales did drop a bit. Just because Josh Groban was such a big celebrity name. And from what I understand, kind of as a way of, I guess, like, pumping up the show again, they decided to bring in Mandy Patinkin, who's a really acclaimed actor, has, like, won awards, and was a fan of Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet. However, this ended up being... quite a significant controversy because Oak is a black man and Mandy Patinkin is white, and it's basically appeared that they were replacing an actor of color with a white actor because he was more marketable.
And the key factor here is they were cutting Oak's run short for this.
They were cutting Oak's run short. So there was just a lot of things that happened from that, kind of like, I think Twitter and just like a lot of other actors did not approve of this and thought that it was like disrespectful to like actors of color and Oak specifically. So Mandy decided that he was not going to step in to play Pierre. And at that point, like, Oak was not going to come back to play him either. And everything just kind of crumbled and the run ended.
It was a veritable PR disaster.
Yes.
And it was really sad because, and I mean, like, obviously this is a whole conversation, but I think that my TLDR version of my thoughts is like, yes, race in theater, especially like on the Broadway level, is a really big issue and a really important issue, but that Great Comet in particular was not the right target.
From what I know about the controversy, I agree. I think I'm mostly in agreement with that. I understand that kind of like the idea of like replacing an actor of color for like ticket sales is not like the direction that we want Broadway to kind of like regress back to doing. But I think that Great Comet was a show that just kind of like embraced like a level of like casting diversity and like colorblind casting. I think like, I guess like, the intentions of the show, I think like if you were picking, yeah, I think just in terms of it could, I think it could have been resolved with, I guess like all of that kind of like credit to the show and what they had done up to that point, that this misstep could have been resolved in a way that didn't involve like the show shutting down.
Yeah. And it's not like they immediately shut the show down because of the controversy, but it was like their ticket sales were not going as well as they needed to. And with this, like it was just another fire that ignited and probably forced it to close months earlier than it would have otherwise, which really sucks. Yeah. And the situation was not great just in general. And I mean, and like, I don't think that any of it was deliberate on anyone's part. Like Mandy Patinkin is a famous guy and he is more famous than Oak, even though Oak is like fantastic. And this was a show that relied on celebrity appearances for ticket sales the entire time with Josh Groban and Ingrid Michaelson. And that's a thing that Broadway shows do. And that it still was not a great situation, especially with the whole just like cutting his run short. And I think that their communication with Oak wasn't great, it sounded like, about it. Because if he had come out, I feel like the communication behind the scenes had been better. And if he had come out with a statement that was like, no, it's totally okay, like, I trust and love this team, then the whole thing could have been better. But clearly they did not talk to him enough about it beforehand, because his statement about it was not enthusiastic.
No, I agree. I don't know any of these people personally, but I don't think that it was something, it did not seem to be something that was like done purposefully, because it was just done like Quinn was saying, like the celebrity appearances, and Mandy Patinkin is extremely famous and extremely like critically acclaimed, like especially he's on like television, so wider audiences translating to like people coming to see him in the show. So I feel that, I think that's part of why, I was so particularly sad that like this kind of was like what put the nail in Great Comet's coffin. Because I think it was something that was done inadvertently. And for that reason, like if it had been better communication, as Quinn said, and it was like presented in a different scenario, it sounded like they weren't super clear on what's happening. Like Oak's run was just kind of like cut short. And then like Dave Malloy, like made a statement that was not great. That was basically like, oh, we'd love to like have him back after Mandy leaves, which is basically being like, you're not our, like, we don't care about you. Not that they don't care about him. Like, he's obviously a valued person, but it came off looking very bad. And looking like he was supposed to just like stand by and wait to come back after Mandy was done with the role. I think if there had been better communication, kind of like a united front presented, it could have, you might be able to see Great Comet on Broadway today.
It could have gone a different way, but it didn't.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, and on the other hand, kind of props to Mandy Patinkin for pulling out once all of this happened, because you don't see that happen very often.
Yes.
Because, I mean, regardless of whether it, like, quote-unquote should have happened in the way that it did. It happened. And, like, faced with that controversy, he was like, I never intended to start any of this, and this is not the position I want to be in. And I respect him for that.
Yes, I agree.
Well, Great Comet lives on in our hearts, specifically Janelle's heart.
Forever and ever.
And I mean, shows never truly die, and there will be other productions, hopefully, and maybe one day someone will bring it back. There are always shows that, like, didn't run for that long, but then get revived and run for 10 years. Yes. And it happens. Mm. You never know.
Yes. I always wonder, whether it could go on. Do you think it could go on tour with, I don't know if that, with that kind of like set and like kind of like that set that's like very integral to the experience of a show, if it could be something that you could like take to like concert halls across America?
The thing is, I think it's like physically possible, but it would be very expensive. Mm-hmm. And considering that they needed a celebrity True. To keep it alive in a permanent space, I don't think that they could get a celebrity to go on tour with them that's mm-hmm. big enough to sustain that. So I doubt that it'll ever be really on tour.
Sad.
So sad. But in the meantime, you can listen to the Broadway cast album, and you can see, like, they did a Tony performance, which was really cool. And there are different ways to experience mm-hmm. the show.
Go on the cast Instagrams all the time, like me.
Leave little hearts and likes everywhere.
Watch Lucas Steele's farewell video.
Lucas Steele has a farewell video?
Yeah, where it's just like him singing the goodbye song, like in black and white, walking through the theater.
That's so sad.
I think it's like just like filming his back. It's great. It's a great, it's so sad.
All right,
Lucas
yes.
Steele is
Check
great.
All this out. Well, that is a sad place to end this, but it is a little bit of how it ends, so mm-hmm. we had to do it. But that's not where this ends, because we do still have our lightning round. So
yes, I'm ready.
Let's get to it. Janelle has a full page of notes, by the way. I'd just so like to announce that.
I wanted to, like, do a good job for Great Comet.
I think you've done an amazing job.
Thank you. Give it the podcast it deserves.
All right. What is your favorite song?
The opera.
The opera.
Moaning.
Stop mooning and moaning. We'll miss the curtain.
And what is your favorite line?
So my favorite line is actually like a whole verse, but I'll shorten it. It's the introduction of Anatole, starting and from then and then a rush of cold air. Through, and he looked right at Natasha, with my particular favorite being... he moved with a swagger which would have been ridiculous had he not been so good looking. Excellent. Who's your favorite character? I think my favorite character is Sonia. Because, like I said before, Sonia's just trying to help. Sonia asks all the real questions. Sonia's like, why... does if he loves you and like we're cool with people visiting, why doesn't he come say hi? Great question, Sonia.
And if you could play a character in the show, which one would you want to play?
I would want to play Natasha, because her song, she does such amazing, like the songs written for her, she just gets to do such amazing things with her voice. Like, it's just beautiful. So I'd want to play her.
Who would you recommend go see this show?
I think I would recommend it to someone who, one, is not particularly tied to a traditional musical theater structure. Someone who is willing to embrace kind of an unconventional approach. I think also someone who is more interested in like character-driven things than plot, really, because... this entire plot does just like take place over 3 days, and is basically like the rise and fall of a very short-lived troubled relationship.
All right. And finally, if you could combine it with another musical, which one would you pick?
So I think there's two options. My first one, I'd say Next to Normal.
Ooh.
Because I think they just have similar vibes. In like, example, when I think of Didn't I See This Movie from Next to Normal, something about it strikes me as very like Great Comet-esque in just like the quality and approach of the song. And then my second option would be Les Mis, actually, just because they've also both just have like very like sweeping, like oscillating musical like qualities to them.
Excellent choices. All right, thanks for talking with me, Janelle.
Thanks for having me, Quinn.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. You can find us on Twitter at @COTSpodcast or online at theincomparable.com/COTS. If you'd like to, give us a review in the Apple Podcast Store or recommend us in Overcast. You can find me on Twitter at AspiringRobotFM. Until next episode, goodbye, my gypsy lovers. That's weird to say.